Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I just want to give people a little bit of insight into the Germans and the Nazis and Hitler. Because when you are dealing with the Nazis, you are not dealing with politics as usual. When I was young and stupid, I thought that Nazism was just another form of politics. I even thought that Nazism was similar to communism, that a Nazi is like a communist. And indeed, in the days when I was a conservative, that was the basic explanation, was that Nazism and communism are very similar. But actually, many years later, I discovered they are completely different, extremely different. And Nazism is very, very different. It is not just another form of politics. It is not just the difference between a liberal and a conservative, between a leftist and somebody who's a nationalist. It is way deeper than that. You will also find that the enemies of Hitler like to use the term Hitler was a man against time. In other words, time was against him. He was going in the opposite direction to the direction in which life and the world and civilization should be going. And in actual fact, nothing could be further from the truth. In actual fact, Hitler had nothing to do with the past. He had very little to do with the past. What he was doing was he was creating the future. And the Nazis were creating the future that is to come. Let me explain in a very short way a little bit about Nazism. The term Nazi was not invented by the Germans. Nazi was a term invented by Jews. The actual term for Nazism is National Socialism. National Socialism. In fact, there never was a political party in Germany called the Nazi Party. No such political entity ever existed. The actual Nazi party was known as the NSDAP. NSDAP is its initials, you could say, its abbreviation. After World War I, there were whites in various countries like Italy and Germany and Austria, and these whites had lost World War I. And the whites in those countries were starting to sort of ask themselves the question, what went wrong and why did we lose? And out of all of this, over a period of years, came new political ideas. And the first political idea was called fascism. And Italy is the place where fascism was born. And fascism contained within it various ideas, and among the things that the fascists looked up to was the Roman Empire that had existed 2,000 years ago. And just as a point, many, many white countries at one time or another were built on the basis of the Roman Empire. In fact, one of the more modern ones is the United States itself. The United States has got all kinds of fascist things in it and references to the Romans. Even here in South Africa, we use Roman Dutch law. The legal system of South Africa that the Afrikaans people and the whites chose is known as Roman Dutch law. And the Roman part being from the pagan Romans of ancient times, because they had a good and fair legal system. Now the Nazis came along and they took a few things from the fascists. And for example, the thing that you know of as the Nazi salute, which is where they hold up their right arm at an angle, and you think that that is a Nazi invention. It's actually got nothing to do with the Nazis. The holding up of your right arm as a salute is the Roman army salute. And the first people who adopted it were the fascists in Italy. Later, when the Nazis were gaining momentum, they also adopted that. So the fascists and the Nazis looked a lot to the Roman Empire for some of their inspiration. But Nazism, in all other ways, is very different to fascism. And the two are completely separate. You cannot compare them. All that you can say is that they have a reverence for the Romans and that there's a little bit of racism in fascism. Fascism itself is actually not truly racist, but Nazism was. And we'll return to the topic of race later. Many different ideas came into what is called Nazism. Lots of different people with different ideas came forward, and the Nazis liked certain ideas and adopted certain ideas and modified certain ideas. Now, at the heart of Nazism in National Socialism, the core philosophy was that the government and the state exists for only one purpose, and that is to serve and look after the common worker. The common worker is the most critical portion of this state. Everything about this state is so that the common white person gains benefit out of the state. That is who the state serves. The state does not serve the rich. The state does not serve foreign interests. The state exists to serve the common workers. However, the state also has the right to direct the common workers along a path that is good for all of them. Even though we are now in 2019 and we imagine that things have changed, there are a lot of things that have not changed and things that have actually got worse. In the 1920s, when Adolf Hitler wrote Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf was already talking about who is a German? Who should be allowed to be called a German? Can somebody from just any other country and any other race be called a German? He was already raising that issue back then. So at the heart of Nazism, in this state, they were going to look after the common people known as the Germans. Nazism was not designed to go and conquer other people and bring other people into the state. Nazism was totally focused on how are we going to live inside Germany? How are we going to make Germany work for us? And what is the best system of organization that is going to allow us to live a better life? That's all it was about. It is very different to communism, which had its origins in the Jew Karl Marx. Karl Marx set out to conquer the world. He set out to conquer the world with communism. But the original Nazis were just interested in saving Germany because Germany was very chaotic after World War I. Now, the idea of socialism as the Germans saw it was very different to communism as the Soviets implemented it, and as it was implemented in Eastern Europe and in much of the rest of the world. Socialism was meant to assist the people. It was meant to assist everybody. And they started looking at ways in which they were going to change the economy. The economy in Nazism basically functioned as a capitalist economy. It functioned as a very normal economy that you see anywhere today in the Western world, except that the government could intervene and could start making rules regarding industries, regarding imports, exports, and lots of other things. The state would intervene in order to see to it that the country grows faster and that the people can live better. One of the first ideas that came into it economically had to do with debt. They actually were trying to find ways of stopping people getting indebted and going bankrupt. Believe it or not, but Nazism actually found a mechanism whereby debt could be completely and utterly written off. It was a system unlike anything that you've ever seen in the world anywhere at any time. Another core concept of Nazism is that when Hitler ruled, he had the most family-friendly government probably in the history of the world, and the most small business friendly government in the history of the world. Although state intervention in Nazism was intended to be powerful wherever it was needed, the truth of the matter was that the government was always protecting the common person. The government was protecting the common worker. If you had a little shop, the government would protect you. If you owned a farm, the government would protect you. The government came and made any changes that were needed so that common people could make a living and survive. The government would go and push businesses, big businesses aside, if those businesses harmed common people. The system was very, very different to anything that's ever been tried before. And I'm not going to go into it in more detail than that. But I also will tell you that Nazism is the only system I know of where debt could be completely and utterly written off. Where if you were in debt and you worked according to certain rules of the government, the government could come and completely wipe out your debt overnight. It was a system unlike anything else that's ever existed. Nazism took on the rich. The Nazis never at any time allowed the rich or the super rich to kick common people around like dogs. Fascism is different. Fascism's got a whole big business element to it and many other different things. But Nazism had certain fixed principles in this regard. In South Africa, in the right wing, and also in a few other countries in the white right, people talk about an ethnostaat, or in South Africa we use the term a Volksstaat. The Third Reich was a Volksstaat. It was the only true Volksstaat that ever existed. I repeat, the Third Reich was the only true ethnostate that ever existed in the history of the world. We're going to get back to that. Now, among the thinking that went into this new state, there were ideas that came into it that had to do with major changes in science. In the 1850s, a French nobleman called Gobineau was the first to come up with the idea of racism. Racism is not a German invention. Racism was invented by a Frenchman who actually was a diplomat and lived in many parts of the world. And he started coming to the conclusion that race is the driver of all of history. But the real bombshell of the 1800s was Darwinism. When Darwin wrote his book, The Origin of the Species, and it was published in 1859, that was the biggest intellectual event that had happened in the Western world in hundreds of years. For the first time ever in the time of Christianity, somebody came up with a line of thinking that challenged the notion of God. And Darwinism unleashed forces across the intellectual world that still have tremendous force to this day. And in actual fact, those forces that were unleashed then are actually gaining in strength. Now, a very important part of Darwinism had to do with the fact that you inherit qualities from your parents. Whites have been breeding animals for thousands of years, and they've used the ability of one animal to inherit from the other as ways of designing new animals. So whites have gone and taken dogs, cats, cattle, horses, and they've been breeding them for very long periods of time, and they know that through selective breeding, you can create animals. But the real breakthrough was when a German monk by the name of Mendel, using peas, established the laws of genetics. He was able to show exactly how things move from the parent to the child, and all the strange permutations and how they work. So with this notion that animals and creatures can evolve, which Darwin came and created the basic theory from his observations and travels around the world, combined with what Mendel had learned, combined with what Gobineau had learned from history, you now had science and history coming up and basically telling you that you can plan the future. Not only can you plan the future, but you don't need God. God doesn't play a role in any of this. Or if God did play a role, maybe God invented the system. But the system is there, and that's how the system works. But even God was challenged, and this is where we head into the area of philosophy. In the Bible, for example, you need miracles. You need God to do things. But when these scientists and historians were looking at life, they saw that in the natural world, let's call it the natural world, that in the natural world there are laws, and these laws are no different to the law of gravity. With the law of gravity, if you hold something out at an arm's length and you let go of it, it will fall to the ground. It will always fall to the ground. It will never fall sideways. It will never fall upwards. And so they were now coming to the conclusion that if you breed things in a certain way, if you group people together in a certain way, if you deal with humans and animals in a certain way, that you can get certain outcomes. You can literally plan your own future. So now you no longer need God. You don't need God to allow you to exist. You merely follow the laws of nature, and if you work in accordance with the laws of nature, then nature's going to take you down a certain path. And what then happened was you had philosophers jumping in, and the big philosopher who jumped in was a German guy called Nietzsche. But the key point here is that if you behave in a certain way and you work in accordance with nature, then there are outcomes that nature will give you. And this was an extremely shocking idea that hit the Western world in the late 1800s. Because now it meant that all you have to do is work in accordance with nature and you can change all kinds of things, including your own race. You can change your own people. And so as everybody was looking at things from a natural law perspective, they then began to ask questions. If these laws operate like the law of gravity, in other words, they're always there, they're immutable, they've always existed, and they always will exist, then it means that you're no longer dependent on God. You don't have to pray to God for an outcome. The outcome will come by you behaving in a certain way. And it was Nietzsche who went in and started looking at how can we live and what should we do if all that we have to worry about are the laws of nature. If everything is determined by the laws of nature, then what is right and what is wrong? What is up and what is down? What is backwards and what is forwards? And that is where Nietzsche got stuck into the whole thing. And Nietzsche wrote a whole bunch of books. And these books were about people. And it was about the understanding of people and what are humans and what are our minds and bodies there for and what should we be doing with them and what is it that we should be doing. And one of the things that Nietzsche came up with was he came up with this idea that man is a creature that is going to rise higher to new and higher levels, that the path forwards is upwards. So how do you define upwards? Well, upwards is by looking at history and looking at the ideas and systems that came before and how were those ideas and systems replaced by new things. And out of all of this, Nietzsche came up with the concept of the Übermensch. A more correct pronunciation is the Übermensch, I think. But anyway, Übermensch is often referred to in English as the Superman. And it's not like Superman in the comics. It's a Superman, but he has certain characteristics. If you look at the actual German, what we in English call Superman could also be translated as upper man, and I personally think a more accurate translation is higher man. And so Nietzsche says that man is somewhere between the level of a monkey and the Superman, the upper man, the higher man. And this man is moving along a tightrope, and man is moving forwards, and one day man will become Superman. Let's use the term Superman for now, but Übermensch is the German term. And Nietzsche spent a lot of time looking at Christian values and the values of nature and the lessons of history, and he came up with his definition of the Übermensch. And in a nutshell, the Übermensch is a kind of return to the warrior. The basic reason for this is because Nietzsche realizes that change in history is not something that gets voted on. That in actual fact, change comes from individuals, and that people and groups of people change history. And he realized that whenever history is changed, that those people run into conflict. And the Übermensch is the guy who will change history. But when he changes it, he's going to run into all kinds of problems. And he's still going to do it. He might even be destroyed in the process of attempting to change things. But in one way or another, sooner or later, some Superman is going to cause the next change in history. These changes do not have to be physical. These changes can also be intellectual. But the Superman is going to run into problems. And the Superman must know that this is all part and parcel of how he's going to do his thing. And whether he survives the change that he himself is implementing, or whether he himself will be destroyed in the process, the real issue here is that he's taking on the system and he's trying to smash it into a new order. And if you look at history, you'll see that all new ideas, whether they are religious, whether they are political, whether they are social, whether they're economic, you will find that any real change in history always results in some kind of force that resists the change. And so all that Nietzsche tries to define is he tries to define the qualities of this Übermensch. What is an Übermensch to be like? How must he live his life? What are his values? What is his definition of good? And what is his definition of bad? And in a very basic nutshell, the Übermensch comes out as a type of warrior. Whether he is a physical warrior, a mental warrior, a combination of these, but the Übermensch is somebody who's going to change things. In this sense, it's almost like the world has gone full circle back to the ancient whites of pagan times. And you now find yourself with whites who are thinking in terms of the laws of nature. And a lot of what came to be known as Nazism is based on what you could call natural law. Natural law is a concept that the ancient Greeks used, the Romans used it, and even certain Christians like Thomas Aquinas, I think his name is, also referred to natural law. Natural law is different to man-made law. Man-made law is where we make the laws of how we want society to work. Natural law is where we actually sit back and we look at the way nature runs. We look at how nature itself functions and we derive lessons by watching nature. To give you an example, in nature, we know that the lion is going to go and he's going to hunt the zebra or the kudu or some other creature. We know that the lion is going to chase that animal, hunt it down, hurt it, kill it, and eat it. And we are not going to interfere with the lion because that is what lions do. And that is what is right for the lion. The lion cannot eat yogurt. The lion needs to eat meat. So the lion can't sit at a table and have fruit and vegetables. The lion thrives on meat. The shark is the same. So you look at nature and you say, how does nature behave? And if we were to work in line with nature, what would the outcome be? How can we rather work in a way that works with nature rather than against nature? So I'm going to leave it at that. That when you get down to National Socialism, Nazism, There's a lot of science, there's a lot of history, and it's all based on facts that we know. And it's a move towards living in accordance with the laws of nature. And it's aimed at making the life of the common person, the common white person who lives in the country, it's aimed at making their lives better. But in this system, there is a striving upwards. In the same way that I said that Nietzsche said that man will become a superman and must strive towards being a superman, this system looks at quality and improving things and improving yourself and improving everybody around you. And it is a path upwards. It's completely different to communism, which smashes everything down to the lowest common denominator. This is a system where the common person and everybody together work as a team, and you are striving upwards to new heights. And I'm going to leave it at that. That will give you a very basic idea of this thing called Nazism, because it's very, very different. It's not just a system of politics. It's a way of life. It's a way of looking at life. And it's a natural way of looking at life. And to give you a final example, in life, there is a lot of struggle and strife, and things go wrong. And a Nazi looks at this and says, that's fine. Life is hard. Life is a struggle. It always has been a struggle, and it always will be. And I have to go and face that life and face that world, and I have to enter into that struggle, and I too will come out better as a result of it. It's a totally natural approach to life. However, when these people put this system into action, the power and the energy and the genius and the many fantastic things that came out of this system are almost beyond belief. Even today, if you go and you look at some of the scientific and engineering and other achievements in the time of the Nazis, it reads like science fiction. And these people simply went and they just faced the world as it is. And they are very comfortable. They never bemoan their problems in life. They don't complain. They don't cry out for help. They look at life and they say, yes, life is difficult. Life is hard for the lion, and life is hard for the zebra as well. But that is life, and that is the way it is. But I have a role. My country has a role. My leaders have a role. There's a structure for all of us. And if we work as a team, we're all going to do better. I'm going to leave it at that, but I hope that you appreciate that Nazism is completely, completely and utterly unlike anything that's ever existed before or since. And later I'll explain to you the links between Nazism in Germany and apartheid in South Africa, because the two do have links. Even apartheid had a little bit of socialism in it, among other things. But a critically important thing, and in certain ways, apartheid itself embodied some of these things, in that apartheid, for example, said that people are what they are, and because they are different, they need to be kept apart. In the Bible, you will find there is a reference to the time when the lion will lie with the lamb. But that is not the way that natural law would work. If the lion and the lamb had to be brought together, we know that the lion will eat the lamb. So while the Bible might say that you need to strive for the lion and the lamb living together, that is not the way these whites looked at things. These whites were simply saying, if you had the lion and the lamb together, the lion would eat the lamb and that would be the end of that. That's the way natural law would work. So it's a very different way of looking at life. And that is where I think you're going to be shocked by some of the philosophies, is the realization that whites can look at themselves and say, you know, what am I? What are my natural instincts? What is it that we really want to do? What is nature wanting us to do? In the Bible, the closest that it comes to talking about the lion and the lamb is actually in Isaiah 11:6. And it says, the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion and the fattened calf together, and a little child shall lead them. So this is part of a prophecy of a time when God's kingdom reigns on earth, when there is no conflict. But in this current age, these things would not be possible. The leopard and the young goat will not coexist. The young goat will be in the leopard's stomach, and the wolf and the lamb, well, the wolf is going to be having lamb chops for dinner. And just for the record, these people went on to create amazing things while living very peaceful lives. These people in no way suddenly became raging maniacs. They actually embodied the highest culture in the world at the time. And many others looked at them and looked up to them for their amazing achievements. But because Nazism embodies many, many different ideas that you won't find anywhere else, there was a need by lots of others to destroy this thing. The rich, the super rich, the elites needed to destroy this thing because it contained too many new ideas, too many things that would totally shatter other countries. And once people saw it working in one country, everybody would want to do it. That is what really threatened the elites of the world. And it has a level of sophistication in it unlike anything you've come across. And there's much more that I will tell you about it later. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.